Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, since we only have two shows to celebrate Mother's Day, and that's the minimum amount of shows we should use to celebrate Mother's Day, I thought we'd start with a essay by the very talented Garrison Keillor, who, of course, is an author and the radio host of A Prairie Home Companion. And he entitles his essay, Let's Talk Frankly About You and Your Mother. Garrison writes, I'd like a word with you about your mother. I realize that Mother's Day is a fake holiday perpetuated by the greeting card industry and the florists, but it's here to stay, so make the best of it. And it's time you did something nice for your mother. I bring this up in advance of Mother's Day so you can plan a little bit and not roll out of the sack on Sunday and fritter away the morning and then dash over to Mom's and on the way pick up a cheap box of chocolate-covered cherries at the gas station, or a gallon of windshield cleaner, or whatever you were planning to give her. Cheap chocolates are not appropriate for your mother, nor is a bouquet of daisies marked down 50% at the convenience store. What you owe your mother is a sonnet. A 14-line poem in iambic pentameter, rhymed just like Shakespeare's, When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state. Look it up. You can do it if you try. Your mother loves you. She has loved you from day one. She loves you on your bad days and your good. She was on her way to Broadway, and Hollywood was taking a look at her when your father got her in a family way, and she put glamour and fame behind her and had you instead. Think about it. All that pain. And then out you came. Not the high point of her day, believe me. She changed your poopy diaper when the stench was such as to make strong men dizzy. And when you hopped up and ran off, leaving a brown trail behind you, she mopped that up too. At a certain age, you put everything into your mouth, dirt, coins, small toys, cufflinks, and when she stuck a finger down your throat, you refused to vomit. Nothing would come up. All she could do was pour Listerine in your and hope for the best. But if she tried to coax you to eat green leafy material, then you would throw up quarts of stuff. And she'd clean it up and take you in her arms and comfort you, although your breath was rancid. You were not a bright child. I realize that you think you were in the accelerated group, and that was your mother's doing. Her greatest accomplishment was to protect you from the knowledge of your own ordinariness. The rest of us knew. You just didn't. Nor did you realize the extent of your bedwetting. 3 a.m., you sat in a stupor while Mom changed your urine-soaked sheets, tucked you in, and sang you to sleep with If Ever I Would Leave You from Lerner and Lowe's Camelot. She loved you through the dark valley of your adolescence, when you were as charming as barbed wire. You surrounded yourself with sullen friends who struck your mother as incipient criminals. Her beloved child, her darling, her shining star, running with teenage hoodlums. But she bit her tongue and served them pizza and sloppy joes, ignoring their countless shortcomings. When you were 17, when other adults found you unbearable, and even your own aunts and uncles looked at you and saw the decline of American civilization and the coming of a dark age of arrogant narcissism unprecedented in world history, your mother still loved you with all her heart. She loves you still today, despite all the wrong choices you've made. Don't get me started. Go write your mother a sonnet. It costs you nothing except some time and effort. Do not buy her chocolate. She doesn't care for it. She only pretended to for your sake. Do not take her out to dinner. She has eaten plenty of dinners with you, and one more isn't going to be that thrilling. She might prefer to snuggle up in a chair all by herself and watch Singing in the Rain and have a stiff drink. You do know your mother drinks, don't you? Ever wonder why? Get out a sheet of paper and a pencil. Here's an idea for a first line. When I was disgraceful and a complete outcast. You can take it from there. You were not a bright child. I realize that you think you were in the accelerated group, and that was your mother's doing. Her great accomplishment was to protect you from the knowledge of your own ordinariness. The rest of us knew. You just didn't. I have to laugh at that. Garrison Keillor, radio host and author of Prairie Home Companion. Let's talk frankly about you and your mother. That's true. Write your mom a sonnet for Mother's Day. Something different. No chocolate. What is Mother's Day? We should define that. The lady by the name of Anna Jarvis, born in 1864, passed away in 1948, was the originator of Mother's Day. Anna was from West Virginia, and she was concerned, as I'm sure the mothers are today, about the neglectful treatment of mothers by their adult children. The first American Mother's Day was May 10th, 1908. President Woodrow Wilson made it official the second Sunday in May. Flowers are traditional. Red carnations, a symbol of a living mother. White, when a mother has died. So that's something we have to celebrate a week from this Sunday. And we have a whole week to get prepared for it, as we should. Very important. Mother's Day is a very important holiday. Some great quotes attributed to and about mothers from Maureen Hawkins. Before you were conceived, I wanted you. Before you were born, I loved you. Before you were here an hour, I would die for you. This is the miracle of life. Jewish proverb. A mother understands what a child does not say. From the author Maxim Gorky, only mothers can think of the future because they give birth to it in their children. Always like this one. All mothers have intuition. The great ones have radar. Isn't that the truth? Norway is the number one country for mothers. According to a survey, the best place in the world to be a mom is Norway, where maternal and child mortality rates are low, women's life expectancy and years in school are high, and the average maternity leave is about 1 year, a new study measuring the well-being of mothers and babies shows. Afghanistan comes in last, and the United States places 31st in Save the Children's 12th Annual Mothers Index, released Tuesday. The international nonprofit group's ranking analyzes the maternal and child indicators and other unpublished information of 164 countries. The survey considers Afghanistan the worst place to be a mother. Women there have a life expectancy of 45 years, the world's lowest, and one of every 11 women dies in childbirth. Wow. 20% of children in Afghanistan don't live to age 5. By contrast, a typical Norwegian woman lives to 83, and just one in 175 will lose a child before his or her 5th birthday. The United States came in at 31, mainly because its maternal mortality rate of 1 in 2100 is among the highest of any industrialized nation. As a result, a woman in the United States is 7 times more likely than one in Italy or Ireland to die from pregnancy-related causes, and her risk of maternal death is 15 times that of a woman in Greece. Provision Theater, of course, our good friends at the Provision Theater. We're going to be talking with Tim Gregory, the artistic director and founder, here in a week or so. Their new show, the Spoon River Anthology, Edgar Lee Masters. This exciting new theatrical adaptation of Edgar Lee Masters' poetry explores the accounts of a fictional town's triumphs and failures and loves and losses based on the epitaphs from the town's gravestones. Don't miss this astonishingly stirring and emotionally satisfying offering. The dead, sleeping on the hill in their village cemetery, return to tell about their lives, tales of war, poverty, religion, and marriage, among many other themes in this gossipy detail of Middle America in the early 20th century. Of course, the artistic director and founder of Provision Theater is Tim Gregory, also put this together, as he has so many other successful plays at the Provision Theater. It runs through June 16th on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. For information, 312-455-0066. Provision Theater, located at 1001 West Roosevelt Road, right next to UIC and Kitty Corner from St. Ignatius. And a great time in Chicago. Buckingham Fountain has opened officially. Chicago Park District officials and representatives from Sears Holding Corporation, March of Dimes, and Kmart, as well as children who benefit from the March of Dimes as babies, turn on Buckingham Fountain for its 86th season and kick off fundraising for the 30th anniversary of the partnership between March of Dimes and Kmart. Buckingham Fountain, of course, located at 301 South Columbus. It opened just a couple days ago, on Thursday. Buckingham Fountain operates daily from 8 to 11, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., through autumn, weather-dependent. Times are subject to change when special events take place in or around Grant Park. During the season, the fountain produces a major display shooting water from the center jet 150 feet into the air. The daily display begins at 9 a.m. and thereafter. It is every hour on the hour. Beginning at dusk, the fountain's major display is accompanied by a 20-minute light and music show every hour on the hour. An additional and final display of the evening begins at 10:35. For more information, call 312-742-PLAY, P-L-A-Y, or visit thechicagoparkdistrict.com. Always good to get that information. Martin Juanitza always keeps us tuned in on what's happening, and Buckingham Fountain's open. A definite sign of summer. Yes, is celebrating, of course, Mother's Day with some special cupcakes from Swirls and our good pal Pam Rose. I know my studio producer Josh always enjoys me talking about these. Strawberry shortbread. I love shortbread. Strawberry shortbread cupcakes. Moist vanilla cake filled with fresh strawberry compote and cream cheese buttercream, topped with a white chocolate-covered shortbread cookie and strawberry buttercream. Gosh, that sounds good, doesn't it? Or chocolate-dipped raspberry red velvet. Red velvet cake filled with raspberry ganache, topped with cream cheese buttercream dipped in chocolate ganache. Of course, available with gluten-free and vegan gluten-free varieties available. Very important. Gluten is the wheat that's in so many different dishes and products, and you can live without it. And you're better off living without it, very frankly. Young people with all their organic food and so forth subscribe to that, and it's well worthwhile. But Swirls, because cupcakes make people happy, located at 705 West Belden in the Lincoln Park neighborhood. You can call 773-404-2253, or you can go on their website, which is Swirls, S-W-I-R-L-Z, cupcakes.com. As for our friend Pam Rose, I mentioned, of course, the Kevin Moore Show, because they're terrific people. We just think the world of Pam, and she does such great things for everybody. Well, we're going to shoot for a little music here from Henry Mancini and his CD Classic Music Love Songs. Certainly one of my favorites from the movie The Summer of 42. It was an Oscar winner from Michel Legrand. The film was set in Cape Cod during World War II, evoking the pain, the confusion, the memory of a young man's coming of age and young love. So, from The Summer of 42, The Summer Knows. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Henry Mancini playing Michelle Legrand's Oscar winner, The Summer Knows, from the movie The Summer of 42. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. At The Kevin Moore Show, of course, we talk about culture and the arts in and around the city of Chicago and across the nation. We talk about music and dance and best-selling authors and award-winning restaurateurs. And don't always get into a lot of the politically explosive topics of the day, but I came across an article in the Sun-Times written by Cheryl Lavin, and I thought it worth sharing. It has to do with, of course, the issue of gay pride, I think, and but it was so well written, I thought that I should share it with everyone. It's entitled, Man Receives the Perfect Response After Coming Out to His Mother. Cheryl writes about a letter that she received. Jimmy says he remembers it well. It was a dark and stormy night, actually a dark and rainy afternoon. My mother was in town staying with my sister, as she typically did. He asked his mother to go for a walk with him. She replied, quite logically, it's raining and cold and dark. He said, I know, let's go for a walk. Jimmy was 30-something at the time, part of a traditional Italian family. I just couldn't go on living a lie, but I couldn't live a secret double life as did so many gays. I had to go into gaydom openly, not secretly, preferably with parental understanding. So Jimmy and his mother walked in a nearby park for almost an hour. He kept waiting for the right moment to bring it up. Guess what? There is no natural break in a conversation in the park for such things. What was I thinking? Nice leaves, pretty colors. By the way, I'm gay. On the way back to his sister's house, Jimmy knew it was then or never. So, suddenly, I said, Mom, there's something I need to tell you. Then I got so choked up that I couldn't speak. I remember saying, once I say what I'm about to say, there's no going back. Everything will be changed forever. I won't be able to undo it. Then I swallowed. I was so full of tears and I couldn't get the words out, and my mother said, what is it? I swallowed again. There was a lump in my throat the size of a grapefruit, and I couldn't talk. And she just looked at me and said in her broken English, what is it? It's about you not liking girls, isn't it? I told her yes. There was a pause, and then she asked naively, are you sure? Have you tried talking to a doctor or something? I told her I just knew. This wasn't a doctor thing. I just knew. You just know what your heart knows. And do you know what she said? This peasant woman, this Italian peasant woman, born in 1933, barely literate with a fourth-grade Catholic education in rural Italy. Do you know what she said? She said, good. Go do what you have to do. Live your life. Don't worry about us. We'll figure it out. But live. Be happy. Don't think about us. Think of yourself. Do what you need to do to be happy. Get out there. Be free. Years went by. Jimmy introduced his mother to the man who would become his husband. In about 30 seconds, she saw him for all of his strengths and weaknesses. She counseled me to stick it out when times were tough, and they have been. Trust me on this. She was my biggest supporter. Jimmy came out to his mother almost 20 years ago. She died 2 months ago, suddenly and tragically. I'm still coming to grips with it. Oh, how I miss her. I think often of her words, go, think of yourself, be happy. What powerful words. Who will ever say those words to me again? From Cheryl Lavin's column from the Sun-Times. I thought a very touching little article, and I thought I'd share it with you because it certainly so well written, so heartfelt, so very sincere. Certainly touched me when I read it. And life goes on, as it must. Maybe a nice celebration of a certain mother, or maybe of all of our mothers for Mother's Day. Go back to Henry Mancini, his classic movie Love Songs from the great Thomas Crown Affair movie. Michelle Legrand's music again, lyrics by Marilyn and Alan Bergman, who we had the honor to have on our show a while back. Steve McQueen, Faye Dunaway, The Windmills of Your Mind. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. The Windmills of Your Mind, Michel Legrand and Marilyn Allen Bergman, of course, from the Thomas Crown Affair. The first one, directed by Norman Jewison. Of course, the second one was with Pierce Brosnan. Terrific movies. And we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The Actors Training Center Repertory Company at the Wilmette Theater, 1122 Central Avenue, will present Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr., the enchanting theatrical version of the beloved Academy Award-winning film, in a limited engagement now through Sunday, May 12th. Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr. is a slightly shorter than the original Tony Award-winning stage production and perfect for children 5 and older. The production is directed by Jeff Award winner Janet Lauer, artistic director of the ATC Repertory Company. When he ventures outside of his picturesque French town, an inventor named Maurice becomes lost in the woods and seeks shelter in an old castle, but is swiftly taken hostage by the beast who lives there. Maurice's beautiful daughter, Belle, must give up her freedom and take her father's place at the castle in order to save his life. With the help of a perky teacup, kind-hearted armoire, sassy feather duster, a wise clock, and more, Belle is able to transform the beast back into a handsome prince in this musical celebration of the power of love and friendship. Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr. has an exhilarating score, including Beauty and the Beast, Be Our Guest, Home, and Something There. The production features music by Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, along with songs by Menken and Tim Rice, and a book by Linda Wolverton. The not-for-profit Wilmette Theater is the premier multi-arts and performance center anchoring the downtown Wilmette Business District by providing vibrant entertainment, education, and enrichment for the community. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage and screen, nationally recognized acting teacher in Los Angeles, North Carolina, and the Chicagoland area, professor at Northwestern University, mentor, founder, and director of the Actors Training Center, a school for young actors in Chicago's north suburbs, one of the brightest stars in the world of professional acting, teaching, and training for young people, now presenting Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr. at the Wilmette Theater, 1122 Central Avenue, Miss Carol Debo. Carol, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Wow, that was lovely. Could you just say all that again?
Certainly, if you have time, I can do it. Well, great to have you on the show, and congratulations on the wonderful success you've had up at the Wilmette Theater in such a short period of time, Carol, and in training all these young, talented people that you see so much of.
It is a pleasure. It is an honor and a pleasure to train all these young actors. It really is.
You know, somebody like yourself who has been an actress and still is an actress and a director and wears so many different hats in the entertainment field, to see young people want to be what you are someday and will achieve that, got to be very gratifying.
Well, it is gratifying, and I think that we underestimate our young people on many levels. We just don't do that at the Actors Training Center. We set the bar high for them and expect them to work at a level where I would work or any of our professional actors work in the city. And lo and behold, with a little kicking and screaming, sometimes from their parents, not even from them, you know, they hit these heights where they turn around and they'll say to myself or Janet Lauer or Philip Markle, my associate director, I didn't know I could do that. Wow. And that, to me, is what is so gratifying about how we train and the kids that then are able to go to the performance level.
Man's reach must e'er exceed his grasp. Else,
exactly
what's a heaven for, right? Isn't that true?
It is so true.
I have the opportunity to serve on the board at the Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, have for many years, and it's amazing to see some of their productions. These young people are as professional as those people are on the stages in Chicago and on Broadway, and they perform in some of these productions, even at a young age, and that's the future of our business here.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we are asked, I would say, on a daily, weekly, monthly basis from all the Chicago equity theaters and many casting directors from New York and L.A. to refer students to them because the word is out that, you know, we set a bar high and our kids are just amazing. I even hesitate to call them kids because they don't seem like kids to us.
Well, your success is not limited to the Chicagoland area. Of course, it's coast to coast, and I know you have a relationship with some people in Los Angeles also.
We do. We have many relationships in Los Angeles with casting directors and agents. We have a student, in fact, who is one of the leads in Sofia Coppola's new film that's opening in June, The Bling Ring. Hmm. And she's an ATC student, booked this film. When she booked it, we didn't even know that Sofia was directing it, and she plays opposite Emma Watson and several other young stars, and that is opening in June. In fact, we're going to be having a fundraiser at the Wilmette Theater. The distributor's kind enough to give us a print on June 17th. So she's doing well. We have another young student who just opened on Broadway in The Big Knife with Bonnie Cannavale and Richard Kind, who was just nominated for a Tony Award for his performance in The Big Knife. And a lot of what the students say is that it's not just the acting training, it's the business skills training that they are acquiring through us.
Do you see the young people? I mean, there's a lot of responsibility, I think, and I would think that you're the professional, you know better than I, mm-hmm. that goes with being on stage and having a background in the theatrical arts and so forth. You know, your first reaction is, well, some of these kids are little brats and stuff like that, and they really don't know what the responsibility is that they have towards interacting with other people. But I would imagine that's something that's part of their learning, so that they know that, you know, they're not special, they just have a special skill.
Look, until you're on a set of a commercial or a film, you are humbled by how insignificant you are in the world of entertainment when you see all the other skills and all of the other professionals that go into putting together a film or a commercial or a play. It is the best way to humble any young actor. It's also devastatingly frightening to be relied on like that. The fundamental skill of acting is, honestly, I believe, is to listen and respond appropriately and honestly. So if we teach our students to do that and not let them get away with anything less than that, that's half the battle. And the other half is to understand that the product and the project are not about you. It's about the ensemble. It's about everybody that's around you. So whether these kids then go on to be professional actors as adults, or they become dentists, or they become HR executives, these are fundamental skills in life that will carry them and serve them quite well. But I really believe it is daunting for these young actors to have to get in front of a camera, to have to get on a stage and realize, oh, wait, I need the lighting person. I need the sound guy to mic me correctly. I need the other actor here to feed me my line. It's actually a wonderful way to assist in their development as human beings.
My grandfather said, God gave you two ears and one mouth so you can listen twice as much as you talk.
That is exactly what my father used to say, but he used to say it in Yiddish, actually.
Okay. Same point.
Exactly.
But it's a team approach. You're part of a team, and you're not going to succeed individually. You're going to succeed as a team. And once everybody understands that, then you'll be successful universally.
And it's not always about the person that's on camera. It's not always about the person that has the lead role. It's just not. It is about the whole ensemble, and that means behind the scenes and, you know, and in front.
When did you get to the point, because you were a successful actress yourself, when did you get to the point and say, this is something different that I would like to do? I'd like to kind of be a leader in the youth movement of teaching these young people.
I was asked quite a bit when I had young children, how do I get my child into the business?
Mm-hmm.
My kid would be so cute in commercials. My kid's a movie star. And it always rubbed me the wrong way, to be quite honest, because when I was an actor, I would have liked to have been in more films and theater. We all would. And there's a misconception that there's that you can get discovered at the soda fountain mentality. And it started a little bit when I started helping people or explaining to people how the industry worked. And I found I had a knack for getting young actors from A to B. And myself listening in a session with a young actor as I was coaching them. I also think I liked having a little bit of control over what I did. Whereas an actor, you can put the best performance out, the best audition. But at the end of the day, it's economics. Supply outweighs demand. And it becomes about who you look like, who you don't look like, how you look next to the other actor. And what I really liked was being able to have an effect on young actors and have some real quantifiable control over what I was doing.
You still enjoy doing it?
Teaching young actors, love it.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. In fact, nothing makes me happier than to be in session with young actors. I'm writing a curriculum right now, in fact, teaching a 4th to 6th grade auditioning for the camera class. Normally, I don't teach that young, but it's a new class for us, and I wanted to write the curriculum. And these young actors are as engaged and well-behaved and as talented as any adults that I have taught. And, you know, we say in my class, what happens in my class stays in my class, because to teach them to put themselves into their work, that they have to use their own experience and their own emotional library to make it real, is very scary for a lot of adults. It's very scary for kids, especially for young teens. And we create a very safe environment so that they can feel exactly what that feels like So you'll say to a student at the end of a take, if I'm teaching an on camera, why did that work? And they're shaking, honestly, Kevin, because they realize it was just because they weren't faking it anymore. It was, they were not acting.
But in saying that, though, Carol, they're gaining the confidence that they're going to have, as you said, no matter what line of work they're going to try to go into, whether it's acting or whether it's the business world or whether it's being a mom or a dad, they have confidence they're going to be able to pass on to somebody else.
I couldn't. It is absolutely true. So when a child decides not to become an actor or they decide it's not for them, the skill of being honest, being direct, and listening before you respond and responding appropriately is, to me, the key to a successful any career.
So you do more than prepare them for a career or a career in acting. You prepare them for life.
That's what it's about. Yeah. I believe that's what it's about. And I feel that is what I get very excited about, when you can reach a young person and they're able to express themselves. The other thing that's very interesting in teaching young actors, which is one of the reasons that I stay with it and I get so charged about it, is there are no groups or cliques at the Actors Training Center. So you'll be in a classroom with the kids who are very popular at school and kids who eat lunch alone at school. And then you create an environment where there's an ensemble. And the kids that grow from that are both kids, the popular cheerleader and the child that eats alone, reach this understanding of each other that they're not going to reach in school because we don't have cliques and we won't accept it. It's the Actors Training Center. And I've had kids that have just sat and held each other and wept in each other's arms. Two girls, it's a real story. And they just had a moment and they're fast friends now. And they both learned to appreciate their differences and their similarities.
I think there's one problem you have, though, Carol.
What's that?
You don't have any excitement for this.
No, I dislike what I do. I'm actually so passionate about this, and I'm so passionate about every kid that comes through. And it's gratifying. It's gratifying. We just got a call from Steppenwolf Theater. They're looking for young kids for their new season. And we'll always send them the kids that we know that can handle it. And just for them to get the call, they understand what that means. If they don't get it or they don't get called back, they're okay with it. Mm-hmm. But to get that call and have the experience to go down there, it's thrilling for them.
Got to at least try. Wilmette Theater's gone through different configurations, and now it has found kind of a niche here with the Actors Training Center Repertory Company. I think it's terrific. Yeah, you're doing other things also.
We're doing a lot of other things. You know, we're still educating through film. We have discussion groups. We have a talk show that goes on every couple months from one of the writers at Make It Better magazine. We're always reinventing ourselves. That's why we're artists and we create.
Well, you and I have to have a conversation because we have some ideas ourselves here.
Oh, we do? Good.
Well, we certainly do. We certainly do.
I would love to do that.
The young people that you have come from the north suburbs or from around Chicagoland?
Oh, no. They come from Milwaukee.
Ooh.
They come from the western suburbs. We have a young girl who drives from Indiana once a week, comes to her three-hour class, and drives home. In the summer, we have kids that come in from northern Wisconsin, and we try to place them with another student that lives nearby. Kids that come in from Palatine, Prospect Heights, Naperville.
Oh.
Yeah, they're coming in from all over.
So when are you going to expand to another location a little farther south here?
You know, we talk about it. We talk about it. We have already expanded into a new space a block away because we just didn't have enough classroom space. And now with the repertory company putting up, so many shows a year, we needed rehearsal space. But right now, my philosophy is just take it a step at a time. You don't want to move too quickly. I like to dot my I's and cross my T's before I move forward.
Sounds like you're doing that very well. The Actors Training Center Repertory Company's mission is to provide an educational integration of cultural, historical, and social issues through live theater.
Mm-hmm.
The Actors Training Center offers professional, process-driven classes for actors from kindergarten through 12th grade, as well as adults. K through 12 students at the Actors Training Center at the Wilmette Theater are able to take classes to develop skills in dramatic acting, improv and sketch comedy, physical theater, and musical theater. Adult classes include Actors Essentials, Adult Improv, On-Camera Technique, and more. And scholarships are available. And on the line with us right now is the director and founder of the Actors Training Center Repertory Company, Carol Debo. Carol, maybe a phone number or a website if people would like to get some information?
Absolutely. They can always reach us at actorstrainingcenter.com, and they can also reach us at 847-251-8710.
Well, you got great people over at Noreen Heron kind of taking care of things and getting the word out. And anything we can do, we're happy to do that. You and I have to continue our conversation because I think we have some interesting things to talk about. But
I would love to do that. I would love to meet you, Kevin. That would be a thrill for me.
I wish you a lot of luck. I thank you for taking a little time. And continued success, kiddo.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking
with you. My pleasure. Thank you, Carol.
Bye-bye.
Carol Debo from the great, great group of people up at the Actors Training Center Repertory Company in Wilmette. And it sounds like she's got some great and talented people and certainly doing a wonderful job herself and very passionate about what she does. And again, for information, 847-251-7424. Fun having Carol on the show and chatting a little bit. 88 Entertainment announces that the Chicago premiere of The Pianist of Willesden Lane, starring internationally acclaimed storyteller and pianist Mona Golubac, is extending through May 25th at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted. The production is adapted and directed by Hershey Felder and based on the book The Children of Willesden Lane by Golubac and Lee Cohen. The Chicago premiere follows successful productions in Los Angeles and Boston. This beautiful tale told by Mona Golubac herself is performed in the style of musical storytelling that Chicago audiences have come to know from me, said adapter, director Hershey Felder, creator and performer of audience favorites including George Gershwin alone and maestro Leonard Bernstein. Being able to work with her to present this piece has been an incredible joy, both because her skill as a musician enables the evening to showcase some of the world's most beautiful and enduring piano music ever composed, and also because no one else could tell this story the way that she can. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning American concert pianist who was the recipient of the prestigious Avery Fisher Career Grant and the People's Award of the Chopin International Piano Competition, a designated Steinway artist who has appeared at the Hollywood Bowl, the Kennedy Center, and at Royal Festival Hall, Grammy-nominated musician, host of the classic music program The Romantic Hours, author, and now presenting her critically acclaimed show The Pianist of Willesden Lane through May 25th at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted, Ms. Mona Golubac. Mona, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
I am thrilled to be here. Thank you.
It's my honor, and what a delightful, delightful, exhilarating, heartfelt, sincere, touching evening in the theater, Mona.
Well, I'm very humbled by that. This was my dream. I worked very hard, and I have been so thrilled to see the kind of reactions that I'm receiving, not only from the critics, but more importantly from audiences. We started in Los Angeles about a year ago at the Geffen Playhouse, and then Mr. Felder said, I'm going to bring you to Chicago. And, of course, Chicago is like, one of the great cities of the world to perform in. I was incredibly apprehensive and nervous and all of that stuff and, coming into Chicago. But it's just been amazing. I feel such a privilege to be able to walk out every night and share the story of my beloved parents with the audiences that have embraced it so deeply. And I think it's because it's such a universal story. Everyone that attends and they line up afterwards to talk, because we have copies of the books and the CDs upon which the show is based, and they want to share their story. They want to tell me that they knew someone that had a similar kind of historical, thread. Obviously, all of our families, experienced someone through World War II and many survivors, of course, and many children of survivors, and then the young people that have come from school systems and whatnot, really telling me how they relate to my mother, 14 years old, getting on a train, never knowing if she was going to see her mother and her family again, being imparted with a gift, and the gift was the precious words at the Vienna train station: hold on to your music, it'll be your best friend in life. My mother never forgot that. It went into her heart. It burned a hole, so to speak. It branded right into her heart. And as the bombs came down during the Blitz, she never forgot that. And she'd go down into the basement and practice the piano, wanting to hold on to make that promise to her mother. And then when I came along and my sister came along, my mother told us those words, told us the story of these incredible young people in a Jewish hostel during the war that affected her life and how her music affected them, all Jewish refugees saved by the lives of righteous British Christians. And so I just decided one day I wanted to tell her story, and that's how it started.
Well, we're lucky that you're sharing that with us, of course, initiated by our good friend Hershey Felder, who very frankly is an honorary Chicago citizen because of his great success in Chicago. I'm glad he's brought you here. Have the audiences been welcoming to you? Do you feel comfortable here, Mona?
I feel more comfortable even than I did in my own hometown of Los Angeles. It's amazing because basically I came here certainly not with the reputation of Mr. Felder, and like you say, he's like the son of Chicago almost. But I think that I've just tried to walk out directly from my heart onto the stage, tell a story. I think the music of Beethoven and Chopin and Rachmaninoff, the pieces that we all know, the Moonlight Sonata, the Clair de Lune of Debussy, the Grieg Piano Concerto, all these things that we all recognize that we were raised on, I think everyone's embracing it in a different way because now they experience a particular story of a young girl who held on to her music in the darkest of times. And when my mother taught me the piano as a young kid, she would always say, each piece of music tells a story, but you have to discover what that story is. So I'm walking out on stage through the music that she loved and played, and I'm telling her story, which, again, is this very universal story that we really are our brother's keepers, and we really can make it through if we have something to hold on to in the darkest of times.
And she's up there watching us and certainly maybe wishing she was down in Chicago with us.
Oh, well, that's so beautiful what you just said. And every time I walk out on that stage and do the performance, I tell myself, please be worthy of the gifts that your grandmother gave to my mother, who passed it on to me, and worthy of so many parents who had the bravery to put their children on this operation known as the Kinder Transport, save their lives, send them to England, because as we all know, there were these two trains, the ones that went to the east and to certain death, and then the trains that went to the west, to England, and saved these 10,000 Jewish children.
And we should explain that, of course, that came around the time of the Kristallnacht, of course, when the Jewish homes and synagogues were burned back in November of 1938. And then, of course, the Kinder Transport, where there was approximately 10,000 children that were transported into those Christian homes, into London and Great Britain and so forth, which saved all those Jewish people, 7,500 or so Jewish kids. And
exactly. I think it was when the Jewish population really woke up and said something is terribly wrong, and a desperation set in, and then this organization sort of grew in England. And really, hats off to the British Christians. A clarion call went out over the BBC radio, and Quakers and Methodists and Christians from all walks of life opened their homes and their hearts and their souls to these children in this unbelievable operation known as the Children's Transport. It lasted for about 6 months. Children came out from Germany, Austria, and Czechoslovakia, and my mother came out on one of the very first trains.
Of course, you look back at this, and sometimes you'd have to blink because you can't believe that something like this could ever happen. But it did, and it certainly affected your family, your grandma and grandpa. You lost them at a concentration camp, but your mom and dad survived and survived successfully and, of course, had two beautiful, very talented children.
Absolutely right, and this continues to go on. And I think that part of the very powerful reason why I have dedicating my life to want to do this story, and now we're just kind of thrilled because we're getting lots of requests from all over the country from different theaters to perform the show. And we do sometimes these citywide reads where thousands of students have now read the book upon which the play is based. I feel it's so important to tell this story so that it's never forgotten. As we all know, the survivors are dying out. That generation is going, and God forbid it should just become a footnote in history. But even more importantly, to remind ourselves every day that this goes on, that we have a duty here in this world to be aware, and especially with international news and the Internet and whatnot, we really can make a difference. We can really stand up. Back then, I think that the news of what was going on was so hidden. It wasn't immediate. We didn't really have the means to absorb it and digest it. We have that today. And we as conscious human beings have to take a stand for genocides that continue to happen across, the world. And I know my young kids and other young kids care very deeply about that, and that's part of why I'm so strongly committed to sharing my parents' story, because it's way beyond just my mother and my father. It really is a universal story.
Well, God bless you for doing that, but it's all of our responsibility to continue that legacy and to get the word out. And, you know, what we should do, and I know that you have responsibilities, as Hershey does, all throughout the United States, we need to have schools come and see this play. We need to have, as you said, kids need to be reading the book that you wrote and Mr. Cohn was involved in. And we need schools to come out and see this musical performance that you share with all of us, so that we continue that we speak to this, we dialogue this, we talk about this. So maybe someday in our lifetime or someday in our children's or grandchildren's lifetime that won't occur.
Exactly, that it'll be a footnote in history altogether for man's inhumanity to man, and we will only have man's humanity to man. Maybe, God willing, one day this will all just be something in the past. But on that note, I'm hoping that one day maybe we can do what we have done in other cities across America, which is to involve a lot of the school systems here in some large citywide read of the show. And we've been working with some wonderful organizations like Southern Poverty Law, Facing History and Ourselves, some great foundations, educational foundations that have been helpful to us. Of course, we have the blessing and the help of Steinway. I'm very indebted to the Steinway Gallery here and the Steinway Company for being one of our great sponsors. And to my mind, that's playing the Rolls Royce, you know, of an instrument and you know, young people to the beauty of music in that way. And perhaps one day we can do that here in the great city of Chicago.
Do you practice every day, Ma?
I do. I do. I don't take it for granted. Those little fingers have got to stay in shape. You know, just like doing, I suppose, if you don't keep up your bodybuilding or your exercising, your muscles will go away. So I have to do the same thing with the fingers.
Now, do you do, besides classical music, do you enjoy doing a little jazz or some contemporary music, or what else do you play?
I have no talent whatsoever in other forms of
music. Oh, really?
None at all. But I will confess that I listen. All music from all genres,
mm-hmm.
And I listen to a lot of pop music.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to jazz. I even listen to rap. I'm fascinated by it. I want to see what everyone is, what is affecting people. I mean, it's really important to stay very current in the musical thread.
Well, I do that too. I listen to rap and I say, "What is that?" Are you enjoying Chicago, though? You get to get around to see some of our sights and sounds and some of the restaurants and so forth?
God.
Does Hershey let you do that? Because I know he keeps kind of a tight ship going, you know.
He does, but once he left, I escaped. I'm so glad he's in Paris now. And I had the time of my life spending one of my off days and going down with my sister. And we went all through downtown Chicago. We walked around. And then I spent the most glorious set of hours at the old Marshall Building, the Macy's.
Oh, sure.
And then I went to the seventh floor. I think it's the seventh or eighth floor.
Right.
To the restaurant there.
Right.
With those extraordinary chandeliers that were from Vienna.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, I had my images for the opening of my show.
The Walnut Room at the Marshall Fields. We still call it Marshall Fields. We don't call it Macy's.
Amazing. One of the most beautiful buildings I have ever seen. And, obviously, Chicago. I have been here before where I did the architectural river tour.
Sure, that's fun.
Yeah, and so obviously Chicago is like one of the great cities of the world. And what I find most moving is how kind everybody is, and very thoughtful and helpful, and just a very exciting city. So I hope that I will be here, and I was very excited that Mr. Felder announced an extension, and we hope if we do well that maybe we'll even extend another time.
I hope that's the case. I certainly hope that. I'm going to try to see if we can have that happen.
Well, thank you so much.
It's a delight. It's an honor to have you on the show. I wish you continued success, certainly, and anything we can do, and I will tell Kate over at Noreen Heron's office that we will, and get the word out about the great things happening at the Royal George, the pianist of Willesden Lane.
Thank you so much.
88 Entertainment announces that the Chicago premiere of The Pianist of Willesden Lane, starring internationally acclaimed storyteller and pianist Mona Golubek, is extending through May 25th at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted. The production is adapted and directed by the great Hershey Felder and based on the book The Children of Willesden Lane by Golubek and Lee Cohen. the Chicago premiere, follows successful productions in Los Angeles and Boston. And on the line with us right now is Mona Golubek. Mona, I'm going to give a phone number for the Royal George Theater if people would like tickets, 312-988-9000. Continued success, kiddo, and certainly enjoy our spring-like weather, which is finally here. I know you brought that besides your great music here to Chicago.
Thank you. What a wonderful time to have talked to you.
It's my pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mona. Mona Golubek, of course, at her show The Pianist of Willesden Lane through May 25th at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted, just a little north of North Avenue. Very touching, a very sincere, very powerful evening in the theater. Very, very talented lady, Mona Golubek, about a story about her mother who was involved in the Kristallnacht and the Kinder transport, ended up in Great Britain, lived her life, and raised two very talented young women. And Mona tells that story, and a beautiful story it is. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope your listeners have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank Carol Debo, the founder and director of the Actors Training Center, a school for young actors in Chicago's north suburbs, located at the Wilmette Theater, 1122 Central Avenue, for information 847-251-7424, and Mona Golubek, the star and performer in her critically acclaimed show, The Pianist of Willesden Lane, through May 25th at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted, just a little north of North Avenue. For information, 312-988-9000. A Steinway artist, and what a very, very talented lady, telling a very, very touching and important story for all of us. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day. Your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.